Good morning, everyone. Glad you're here this morning. If you're new, welcome. And obviously, everyone's welcome, but it's just nice when we see some new faces. Hope you're enjoying the nice weather and getting out and making the most of it. I'm Jeff, one of the pastors here this morning. We're beginning our best of series this morning, which is really what we do is we look over the last year and a half, 2 years, and we pick messages that we think we want to do again. Sometimes it's because we got a lot of feedback from it, or it stirred up a lot of questions. It got people kind of really, it had traction. And sometimes it's just something that we think needs to be repeated. And I don't know why necessarily I chose this message. I don't think it was one particular reason. There was a number of reasons. One was because it did, I had so many different conversations about it later, but I think it's something that needs to be repeated again and again. And so I just want to jump in. If you follow me on Facebook, or if you follow the Friends Church on Facebook, you're probably sick and tired of me talking about this year being Kathy's and my 25th anniversary, marriage anniversary, wedding anniversary. Hey, well, thank you. Thank you. Some of you have been reading it, it's like, okay, enough already. We've been celebrating since January, and I think about every third post of mine is referencing it, I'm sure. I come from a family where there's been a lot of divorce, and I don't know, maybe personally for me, I'm pretty excited. I feel very fortunate that it's worked out. But over this year, we've been reflecting back over 25 years, flipping through pictures. Kathy and I have had a lot of good chapters, but we've had a lot of tough chapters. Truth is, there were times when we didn't think we'd make it to even number 7. And if you followed our stories along, if you've been a part of Friends Church along, you know what? I haven't really held back too much about some of the skin knees and relational broken bones that we've endured. And somehow we've come through and we're still smiling and in love, which is great. But I started thinking about a lot about the friendships we've had over the years. 25 years, there's a lot of names. Have you ever just gone through your own personal Rolodex or your own database and you see names in there you haven't talked to in years? 25 years amounts to a lot of different. In my role as pastor, I meet a lot of different people, but it was, it's a little bit sobering thinking about all the different friends that we've been close to at different times who are now, we may still connect when we see each other, but there's many people who I was once close to who I'm not close to anymore. There are some friendships that we were really invested in that I wouldn't even consider them friends now. That might sound awful. In fact, it almost does sound really awful to me. And there's almost a level of sadness in it. But it really, I guess maybe it's become very real to me that different things in life happen. Life happens. And all of a sudden, people who are once very close to you, all of a sudden just fade out of the picture. Sometimes it's intentional. You cut them out. Sometimes they just end up going. And I hear this happen all the time. Someone goes through a divorce. Someone gets a new job. Or all of a sudden they have a kid and their friendships all shift. Sometimes there's a sickness. Sometimes there's a location, a move. Some say, you know what? My crowd, my posse, the people that I've invested my life in are unhealthy for me. And they make a bunch of life changes and they leave a crowd of people that they've grown up with. And they start over. For whatever reason, many find themselves in places where all of a sudden, and it's often not until something goes a little bit sideways in your life where it really becomes apparent. Some people notice it before then, but many people don't realize how few friends they have until they need a friend. How many know that to be true? When all of a sudden you're up against it, or you go through a relational problem, or you need someone to help you move, or whatever it is, and you're like, who could I call? Someone goes through a layoff. It was interesting. I was chatting with a guy a while back, and I don't even know him close, but we were just chatting, and I began to ask him just some personal questions, And he said, I got laid off. He looked at me, he said, you're the first person I told. I said, how long have you been laid off? He said, over 3 weeks. I said, I'm the first guy? I didn't say that, but I thought it. Oftentimes we find ourselves with our friendship circles shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And I think that's part of life. But many, many find themselves in a place where they wish relationally they were more connected than they are. So this morning I want to just talk about that. Over the years I've kind of, I love connecting with people. And I've done a lot of reading and whatnot, and I've, you know, I just have a bunch of random notes about things that I think help us keep us relationally healthy. Keep people that matter in your lives. Or rebuild. And I want to talk about the rebuilding process this morning. Can I just ask you right now, just before we get going, who are the people that care about you as much as perhaps you care about them? Part of the community series that we did this message in talked about reciprocity. Vince pitched this idea that says, really, your real friends are the ones that reciprocate. Have you ever found yourself in a one-way relationship where it felt like you were doing everything, the hard pushing, and really when it came to them, they were a no-show? Over time, you kind of go, let's be honest. This is me making this work. This isn't two of us. Reciprocity is big. Let me ask you something. Who are the people in your life who are willing to bring something of value to the table in your friendship with you? I want you to just think about that for a second before we jump into this. Just take an honest, think about the people who are very valuable to you. Okay. So let's get into the random sticky notes about what I think people who are rebuilding their relational lives really think carefully about. Have you ever just stopped to consider what your life would look like if over a year you had a GPS monitor just track your life patterns? Where you go, where you spend all your time. Or in the city, the places you frequent, the stores, the pubs, socially, who you connect with. Have you ever thought much about your personal life pattern? I was just watching a morning show. They were featuring this location services, a scary thing on your phone, where you can actually dial in, and it shows you everywhere you've been over a long period of time. It has little dots. It'll tell you where you've slept last night. And did you know people can dial into that and see where you are frequenting? It's weird. When you look at the life map of where I am in the city of Calgary, where I traffic lots, I'm thinking someone could be watching that. That's scary. But on that, have you ever thought about where you do go? Your life pattern? This weighs heavily, actually, into the relationships that will actually work in your life, I believe. There are relationships that have now dropped off the map for me, and I'm certain a large part of it is because I just don't see them anymore. Geographically, we are not crossing paths enough. Have you ever crossed paths with someone in a store that you haven't seen in a long time? You say, we got to get together. Oh, it's been so long. And you don't? I've said that so many times. Oh, why? Because at one time, our kids were doing the same things together. And we would end up at the same place. I was thinking about this couple. We'll call them Craig and Michelle. Their kid got into hockey for the first time. They enrolled them in hockey. They show up at the rink. They don't really know anyone. They keep to themselves. They watch their kid. They go in, get his skates on and everything. He goes out. They sit there and watch him. And then he comes off the ice, and they leave. And they're doing this for a little while. And Craig was saying, over time, he began noticing the same people there. But he said, I felt like I had enough friends in my life. I wasn't going there looking for more friends. I wasn't looking to kind of strike up the band with a bunch of different people and introduce myself. But over time, you start rubbing shoulders with them. And then before long, he says, one of the couples says, hey, can we bring you coffee? We're just running out. They say, oh yeah, that'd be great. They bring them coffees. All of a sudden, over the course of two games, three different couples strike up this friendship. And they're yakking. He said, within 2 years, we had celebrated our kids' birthdays together. We had vacation together. We became famous friends. How do you explain that? Except their life pattern was bringing them into the exact same spot 2 to 3 times a week. And all of a sudden, there they are. Friendships, the most authentic, often organic friendships happen when you're crossing similar paths. And sometimes we don't really realize who those people would make, who those people are that would make good friends. It's often the people you will see on a regular basis. Consider that. Flip side, friends that you're no longer seeing, life starts moving you out, it becomes increasingly more challenging. So think about the people that you cross paths with. And here's the thing. I like the circle. I have liked the circle of friends that I've had in my life. It wasn't until I really started thinking about this life pattern thing that I began realizing many of my friends that I really love now are in a different place. And the amount of energy that's taking me to try to energize those relationships are getting tougher and tougher. How many know what I'm talking about? And yet there's other people that I'm seeing all the time who I'm just kind of doing one of these two because I'm thinking, no, I got enough friends, right? Just stuff to think about. Think about people at the gym, people in your neighborhood, local Starbucks that you frequent often. Perhaps it's people you volunteer alongside. For many on the spiritual journey, church is a golden opportunity for rich friendships. And at Friends Church, I feel like the pendulum, we've swung the pendulum. At one time, we said, this is the source of all friendships. This is such a person. And I came from a tradition where they said, man, when you connect with someone spiritually, everything else doesn't matter. But and we're not there. Because how many know, man? Like, even within the spiritual conversation, there are people with different kinds of beliefs and different, shades of life or whatever. But church is a place where you intersect with people, likely on a very regular basis. And sometimes I feel like in the pushing the pendulum the other direction, saying, listen, all your friends don't have to come from church. I think there is a case to be made that there is value to making an investment of time into the relationships with people that you are seeing on a weekly basis around here. Some great stuff can happen there. Life patterns. Let me move on. Another thing to consider is affinity. It's true that people bond because they share similar interests. I was at a party. It was a wedding reception. Didn't know a soul except the bride and groom. Have you ever been in those awkward social situations where you have to like pretend you're occupied while not knowing anyone? And so you can only visit the punch bowl so many times and look like you're actually chatting with people that you're not for so long. But anyways, I'm introducing myself to a few people and I hear this woman say the most beautiful words to her friend. She wasn't even talking to me. She said, oh, my husband Jim is a golf nut. And I looked over, and it took me a little while to figure out who Jim was. I located Jim in a hurry, said, hey, are you a golfer? Within a matter of minutes, it's like the whole awkwardness of the whole situation has melted away. And we began to engage about different stuff. And over the course of that evening, man, I was having the time of my life. All of a sudden, other people could hear us talking. Golf nuts started showing up. And affinity is a weird thing where, because there's so many different kinds of affinity, but when you connect, about something that you're passionate about. It's something you can only know a person for maybe a couple minutes, but it feels like you actually see something inside of them, and how many have ever felt like in the matter of just minutes you connected with someone so quickly because you shared an affinity? You shared something with that they're going, yes, yes. I watch it happen when we start talking Netflix and someone says, oh, I love, you name the show. Bloodline. All right, sure. Bloodline. Hannibal. I have a few favorites, but I watch it. As soon as you share something, someone says, oh, you watch that? And it's just like sparks start flying. I don't know why, but over time, as adults, we become somewhat dysfunctional in the way that we look for these sparks to fly as we're engaging with even a group like this. I'm watching out in the park last week as we all went out there and we're hanging out and there's food. And, you know, I think it's just one of those golden opportunities as you're meeting people to be able to kind of throw a little hook out there and find the things, the passions, the affinities that might light someone up. But we often miss out on those opportunities. Have you ever thought about what affinities really light you up? What things you love most that get you talking, like right now? If you survey people's Facebook pages, it becomes pretty easy, doesn't it? That's a beautiful thing about Facebook. You rip through something and go, wow, they love politics. Holy smokes. They're passionate about their kids. Whoa, look at this. They are really into this sport. Huh, that's interesting. Amazing how when you think about affinity, this feeling of closeness and understanding someone has for another person just because of their similar qualities, ideas, interests. How often we get complacent in a group setting like this. And really, if we could just be a little bit more intentional. I'm going to talk about that in a second. I developed a close friendship with a guy named Kelly. He's an atheist. On the surface, and with certain labels, I would have never said we got a lot in common. I would have never guessed he could become such a close friend. But he has become... We are in communication almost every day. So we don't share affinity on certain things, maybe on a spiritual front. But the amount of affinity that we have on some of these other chapters... He and I are into crime drama on TV. That's what got us hooked in. Vice.com. We started talking about, and all of a sudden I began to see, man, he's got some real values around his family. We'll sit and talk over beer for hours about different things that we've tried with our kids. Cultivating affinity with people around you. Powerful ways to draw people into your relational circles. Another thing to consider about the friendships in your life is your capacity. Capacity. A guy named Robin Dunbar, he's an anthropologist, psychologist. He did some incredible research around this. Back in the 80s, social scientists introduced what is now called the social brain hypothesis. Here's what they said. They noticed that primates have large brains. And they say that they think it's because primates often have large social networks, complex societies. They said, this is kind of the leap they made, the larger the brain, the larger the capacity to hold numerous relationships in your life. They were looking at the data, studying it. Then this Robin Dunbar comes along and says, I think this applies to humans. The leap he made is judging by the average size of a human brain, the number of people that the average person can be in connection with, in relationship with, in some form of relationship, is about 150. It's the average number. 150 casual friends is a number that you would invite to, say, a large party if you had the occasion. Weddings, you find yourself going through your social calendar. You go, okay, we could invite them and them and all these people and these people. You got 150 people. These would be considered your casual friends. They would say that this is your capacity relationally. From there, though, through interviews coupled with analysis and experimental survey data, he discovered that that number kind of drops into a level of intimacy by a margin of about 3. I think it's a rule of 3. From 150 that would be considered your casual friends, you move into the circle, what he would call social friends. These are the people you'd invite to a group dinner, a little bit more intimate. These are people you know. You know their names. You know some information about them. You wouldn't consider them to be true friends or like real close friends, but they're people you know well enough, you wouldn't think twice to invite them out to some social gathering. Then he moves it in closer. He said, then there's this group of 15. These are your personal friends. Now again, this isn't an exact science, and for every person it's going to look a little different. But there's 15 people likely who you consider personal friends that you could count on for sympathy, the ones that you could confide in about something going on that maybe isn't good news. There are people that maybe you would reach out to for help. 15 personal friends. He says, then you move into the innermost circle. This is your intimate circle of 5. These are your closest friends. These could be your best friends. This could be your family, your mom, your brother. Normally, it's not more than 5. Often, it's a lot less. In the other circles, you basically know someone's name and you see them on maybe a monthly basis or less. You wave to them in the lobby. Maybe here, you've got a number of different people. You can name off a number of names here, and you see them on Sunday. You pass them on the way out. It's cool. But as you move into the inner circles, you find yourself investing an inordinate amount of time in these relationships. The inner circle, you can find yourself pacing the waiting room of a hospital, hoping and praying for them. You could spend days vacationing together with people in this inner circle. These are the people you would share your most intimate details, the really ugly, the most vulnerable stuff, the stuff that you don't want anyone to know. If anyone's going to know it, it's the people in this innermost circle. Here's the thing, the time and the energy that is required to keep to service your innermost circle is massive compared to any other circle. No, and it becomes less and less the more you move out. Now, there's no right or wrong. Someone's buying pizza at the end. There's no right or wrong formula to how many people you need in this circle. Like I said, these are rules of thumb. Most of us, if you think hard about the people that you would find in each of your circles, some of you will have lots of different ratios. I would guess that the more introverted people in this community would have definitely people in your innermost circle. But the number of people that you'd have in your outer circles would be less and less. Whereas some of the extroverts in the room, you'd be saying, no, I've got tons of people in my social circles. I got tons of people in kind of my outer rings. As casual friends, oh man, I've got so many. Often the extroverts have very, very few personal friends. Really, really close friends. You thought through kind of where your mix is? Here's something that I've found interesting, is often for the introverts, often if they just have 2 or 3 really close friends, they don't really spend a whole lot of time worrying about people in the other rings. It's a shallow talk, surface talk, means nothing. They just need those people in the middle. But what happens is, when something happens, a friend moves away, maybe a couple gets divorced, something happens, and all of a sudden, they are left with hardly anyone in the inner circle. That becomes extremely problematic, because in order to get someone into that those inner circles, it is not something that happens overnight. It takes a long process of finding the right people to move them in. For the extroverts in the room, and this is me, I find myself so easily focused on building new friendships and new relationships. I like meeting new people. I love encouraging people to be part of the circle, that often my closest friends get neglected. Often I find myself spending time with so many people that I barely know, that when it comes to time where I really just need a close friend, I'm going, I haven't really worked on this. It's interesting how when I really start thinking about the people in my life and where they are in relation to these circles, I can see myself shaping up for potential trouble down the road here. According to Dunbar, we have capacity. I can only add so many. And that flips out the other way too. When I'm looking at people that I want to be my friend, oftentimes I'm reaching out to people who already are at capacity too, which is interesting. So many times, the people that are tapped out are the ones that people are reaching out to be their friends. Oftentimes, when we're looking for new friends, the challenge is to find people who have relational capacity left over. People who are needing friends. So in the process, we need to consider, who are those people that could be a right match? It's interesting, I was reading this guy named John Gottman over the years. We've shared about him. He's a well-respected author. But he says the people with the strongest, most vibrant, robust friendship circles are the people who learn how to sort well. They become good sorters, good at sorting through groups of people, looking for the right clues to find those who could be a good match for them. Good sorters are able to figure out what the right questions are to ask. Find those people that are looking for friends. I listen in the social circles that we build around here. I listen as people talk in the foyers, meeting new people, the kinds of questions they ask. You guys live in this area of the city? Key. Proximity. Whereabouts are you guys? How'd you get involved in this here? Is there someone you know here? No, you don't know anyone here? Key. Oh, you don't have many friends already established here. I love this question. If you have a day off, what kinds of things do you gravitate toward? These are sorting questions that are continually watching for people who have already full social circles or not so much. Good sorters will also pay attention to how well the person reciprocates. In the conversation, does this person seem interested at all in my life? Do I feel like they're interested in this conversation? If not, I'm going to move on. Do they already have too many people? Is this just a short? Okay, well then I'm going to keep looking. Good sorters will watch body language. Is this person leaning into the conversation, interested in them as well? Or do they seem distracted or obligated? They're fantastic at looking for social cues. About 10 or 15 minutes of small chat, good sorters, they can locate someone. They go, that person, I think, I should make a greater investment in. Now, these are just random notes that I've watched of people who seem to be able to fill their circles with people that are meaningful and valuable. It's often these pieces, these skill sets that go missing when I'm watching people in these times where they're going, I need to start over. I don't have people that are calling me anymore. I'm isolated. I know that when I talk about sorting introverts, it's a shallow, what can seem like a shallow surface kind of conversation. But this is the piece to get people into your rings, to start moving them forward, moving them into the middle. It's valuable, valuable stuff. Gottman would say that what happens through the process of sorting is you then move to this place of bidding, where you actually begin to invite someone in to a more personal level of relationship. You go from this person that you knew their name to actually inviting them into this place where you're going, I actually want you to be involved more in my life. Some people get stymied there because there's a level of risk involved. There's a risk of rejection. You invite them, you say, hey, I don't know if you'd be interested, but we go out for lunch Sunday afternoons. I don't know if you guys would like to join us. This process of bidding, he says, is often a skill set that people don't think carefully about. It's not enough to just sort out and go, man, I kind of like those people over there. You got to figure out a way to invite them in intentionally. You need to put yourself out there. It's interesting how this process of bidding looks on the different levels of relationship. For casual relationships, it might be as simple as when you walk in here, looking at someone that you thought, man, I kind of like that person. And you walking up and saying, do you mind if I sit here? That is one of the easiest casual bids to invite a person to come closer. If they say yes, great, we're sitting together. Casual. At the social level, there might be an invite to spend more time personally together in more concentrated periods. It might look like, hey, what are you guys doing on Friday night? That is a different story, right? Friday night is premium time for most. To do it Sunday afternoon, that's easy. We're already here. You got to eat lunch. Let's just go for a bite. No skin in the game there, really. As soon as you start weighing in on a Friday night or a Saturday night, then you find out, we got some meat here on the, you know, is there some glue? Someone says, ah. Oh. And it goes on, and there's like rejection of the bed. Then you know, okay, well, that's going to be one of those kind of casual friendships there. We're not moving further. But once you get into that social space, it's at this level where you start typically feeling comfortable asking, and perhaps even moving into the point where you can offer help. You ever had that? Which might sound like something like, you know, is there any chance I could ask you for a favor? Or, you know what, I see you with kids. Do you guys ever get out? Because you know what, we'd be totally willing to babysit. If you ever need a babysitter, let us know. Now, if I don't know that person well, chances are, I ain't offering my kid, and I'm not going to let them take off with my kid. But you start building this level of relationship where all of a sudden you can ask for help or offer help. Very interesting there is where often the line gets drawn. People don't allow people in past that social level. Once you start bidding people into personal space, there's normally a healthy level of trust established. There needs to be. You ever had someone offer something or bid you into a place that you're going, no, hey, whoa, 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 we're not there. Someone says, hey, you know what, we should go out and spend the weekend. We should go for a trip. And you're like, yeah, I don't know you well enough. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, but no thanks. Or someone starts oversharing with you. You ever had that? You start telling something, some detail about your life, and you're looking at them going, okay, I'm uncomfortable now. I don't really need to know about what's going on in your marriage right now. I barely met you. People who become adept and relationally healthy have this sense of being able to slowly bring people into their lives and allow them to be brought into other people's lives, where the level of exposure and vulnerability grows on a regular basis. You're willing to risk them saying no. By nature, there should be increasing levels of vulnerability that matches what you're giving. With the most intimate level of friendship, that's where you get to that place where you are able to look someone in the eyes, to have that opportunity to say, I've never told anyone this before, but I need someone to know about something going on. I'm wondering if I could tell you. I don't know how many people have a person like that. But I'm shocked at the number of people that I come across who have secrets they've never been able to share with anyone. Deepest, darkest secrets, because they haven't really cultivated the innermost circle of friendship. So they live out here without really being known. I find that sad. And I think there is a need to be challenged to find, to be cultivating, to be moving people to these different rings so that you can find yourself in a place where you are knowing and being known. So you can see, as I've walked through this, different kinds of appropriate bids based on the level of friendship that you have with someone. Good bidders understand what kinds of bids are appropriate. They understand what level of friendship they have, and they understand kind of the capacity that they have relationally. You got too many people in your life. Maybe you got to give yourself permission to start saying no to some in order to make time for people who are closer in. Maybe some of you have built your whole relational life on one person. And you're sitting here today and you're going, all I need is that one person. Now hopefully all goes well and you can figure out a way to live your entire life with that person in your life right to the very end. But chances are there are going to be times when that person gets pulled away, and your relational circle is going to be worn thin. You're going to be exposed. You're going to be vulnerable. I know there's people here today who right now your relational fabric is so lacking, and it leaves you vulnerable. And so I want to challenge you, think through, who are the people in your life? Maybe you're in a season right now, you're rebuilding. Think through where those people are that you're trafficking around right now that you could invite in. Think about what levels of friendship and relationship you can be padding and bringing into your circle. Perhaps you're at a place for me where a couple years ago I began realizing I've included so many people into my social circle. I need to build up my personal friendships. I got to stop saying no to certain things, and I got to start focusing on just a few. I got to focus there. I don't know where your relational fabric looks, but I'm going to invite you. We've got June, July, and August, which often are kind of deprogrammed times. They're time when we have more personal time than normal to begin to replenish your relational world. I'm going to invite you and challenge you to make the most of even opportunities like this morning. We're in a place where you are crossing paths with certain people. Be intentional about the time that you've got to possibly either start inviting someone you know well into a closer part of your life, into your own personal space during the week. I don't know what it will look like. But I know this, that over the years of being a pastor, the number of times we staff get pulled in to situations where the relational fabric is so non-existent, It's missing. And we become hired friends in some regard. And I feel so bad for these people. They have not paid attention to their relational fabric. And they didn't even know it until they ended up in a tragic place. Invest time. Make a consistent effort to build up and to spot where are the holes. How many close personal friends are reciprocating in your life right now? Think carefully about this piece, this puzzle, and make some choices this week to start rebuilding your relational world. I'm going to close. We have this vision of this relationally healthy community that isn't ingrown, where our whole world revolves around what happens here in this. Many of you have friends long, like far beyond the walls of this community. And we want to encourage that. We want you to have friends wherever your world is intersecting. But we have this vision of you being in this place where regardless of what goes down in your life, what goes down in your friends' lives, you've been able to meter it out so that you can be available for those people who are looking to you like they are your friends. And vice versa. It's a reciprocating process that pulls you through the seasons and storms of life. That's what we need. And hopefully in this practical, pragmatic, random notes session this morning, it'll get you thinking hard about who it is that you are investing in and maybe changes you have to make. Let me pray. God, thank you for this group of people here. Thank you for the relationships that are represented in this room. I pray, God, this week we would make healthy choices to invest in the lives of those around us. We know, God, when we're relationally healthy, we are just that much more capable of making an impact in our world. Pray, God, for healthy relationships to be forming, growing, and bursting at the seams in the lives of our community. Amen. Amen.